This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here along with Yamona June Thiessen on this Thursday, July 9, 2015. And today we're going to be dopes. Yep, we're going to talk about dopamine.
That's right.
We're all doped up. We hope you're doped up too, but in the right way, of course.
Yes.
So dopamine, this is an interesting selection, and there are going to be some listeners who are going to wonder what possible connection does it have to the law of attraction. I have to admit that's the first thought that went into my head before I realized, you know, something about the role that dopamine plays in our lives. But give us a sort of a 10,000-foot view. Why are we talking about dopamine?
Well, dopamine is the new neurotransmitter. You know, it's the new in thing that all the neuroscientists are studying.
Oh, it's cool.
Yeah, it's the new in thing.
Okay.
But, for practitioners of LOA, dopamine is like the new way to biohack yourself, basically.
Biohack. We've created a new term. I like that.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I can't take credit for that. The people out in Silicon Valley kind of created that term because they are all about finding ways to make their brain more efficient and effective.
Well, they just claim credit for anything that includes the word hack. That's all.
Right? No, but they are so way ahead of the neuroscientists on this whole thing. But anyway, dopamine is one of those things that they're really interested in because what we're learning from neuroscience is that the people who are productive and efficient and high achievers and the go-getters, they have higher levels of dopamine in their brains. Mm. So, you know, we want to learn how to maximize the effect of dopamine. And as law of attraction practitioners, we're all about learning how to take control of our lives, of our brains, of our bodies. You know, how to create deliberately, create the life we want on purpose. And learning about dopamine is one of the ways we can do that.
So what has the research told us? What do we now know about dopamine as a method for improving our ability to succeed that we didn't know before?
Well, the thing with dopamine was that it was kind of ignored for a while because everybody thought, you know, we knew about dopamine in terms of Parkinson's disease, and we knew that in people with Parkinson's, there is a decrease in dopamine production and, of course, in the dopamine function that affects the control of movement. And so, you know, we kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, we got that figured out with dopamine. But then they started finding other areas in the brain where dopamine plays a large part. And now we know that dopamine is involved in learning and habit formation, more importantly. But also now dopamine is, we're realizing, is the reward/motivation neurotransmitters.
So essentially, one of the key symptoms, I guess, of somebody who suffers from Parkinson's is that they lack motivation.
Right. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty severe.
Yes, it is.
That's meaningful to me, as you know, because my father passed from symptoms related to Parkinson's.
Exactly. It is. It's one of those really important areas of study. And it's not just Parkinson's, which, you know, we tend to relate to disease of the elderly. But now they're realizing that dopamine is involved with patients who are schizophrenic. There's low levels of dopamine, specifically in the prefrontal cortex. So with Parkinson's, there's a decrease in the cerebellum, the area of control of movement. But in schizophrenic, it's in the area of the prefrontal cortex, that executive control part of the brain. And also in children who suffer, not just children, but children and adults who suffer from ADHD and ADD, there is low levels of dopamine.
You know, as you're talking about Parkinson's and motivation, it brought to mind the tragic recent death of Robin Williams, because shortly after his death, there were reports that perhaps he had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, mm-hmm. and that had contributed to his mood and so forth. Well, given what you're talking about with motivation, I wonder if it also affected his other demons that he's dealt with over the years that led to alcoholism and drug abuse and so forth, and he was feeling particularly unmotivated. Maybe his dopamine levels were down.
Yeah, so there is, you know, dopamine is so fascinating, and you know, we've only scratched the surface, and for me, I was like trying to get ready for the show, and I just kept finding article after article. I had to like stop myself, like, okay, I gotta.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, because dopamine is one of those. It's kind of an enigma because, so dopamine is involved in the reward. It's one of the reward neurotransmitters, and we've known that for a while, right? Because drugs like cocaine and amphetamines and even alcohol tend to cause an increase in dopamine in the brain, and that's what makes people feel so good, and then they become addicted. But it's in a certain area of the brain. That's in the area of emotions and what they call, you know, the emotional part of the brain and the part of the brain that kind of is involved in risk and risk taking, basically. So, mm-hmm. So the different areas of the brain where dopamine is involved. But what happens with people who have long-term drug abuse is that they actually cause that part of the brain to become so saturated, as it were, with dopamine that it depletes other areas of the brain. So the area that is involved with motivation to accomplish and to be productive, that becomes depleted. And so it's like this really bad kind of, you know, give and take, where you take from one area and you, you know, kind of give to the other area, and it causes problems. And so that when these people then stop using the drugs, there is what is known as a dopamine deficiency throughout the brain, you know, and that caused from Parkinson's anywhere to depression, lack of motivation, all kinds of really, really bad things.
Wow, yeah. So even though we don't know for sure whether or not Robin was actually diagnosed that way, it certainly would make sense if he was, because now it all starts to add up.
Yeah, it does. You know, there's one research that I read about that, you know, they kind of blocked the dopamine production in some mice, and what they found was that they would place the food, you know, just a couple of feet away from the mice, and they would not even get up to go, and they basically starved themselves to death.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, that's particularly meaningful for me with my dad. But anyway,
yeah.
There's also a positive side, because if you have enough dopamine, or is it possible to have too much dopamine?
Too much dopamine. Well, I think so. What that happens when you have people who are probably dopamine junkies, and they become so addicted to that they can want to do all these kinds of risky things. But I think a lot of high achievers have more dopamine than others.
Okay.
So they have too much, quote unquote, but then it makes them extremely productive.
Right, right. Well, it certainly sounds desirable, that's for sure.
Yes, exactly.
So tell us more about some of the desirable sides of dopamine. What does it actually do to give us that motivation?
So what they found, there was this interesting study that I found. They were looking at the dopamine receptors in the brain in an area that is involved in learning and habit forming. And so they had two group of mice, and what they did was they disabled the dopamine neurons in one mice. You know, they trained both groups to push a lever to when they wanted to get their food.
Okay.
And then they disabled the dopamine neurons in one, you know, group and left it intact in the other. And what they found was that the group that didn't have any dopamine anymore, they stopped pushing the lever, even though it was available to them. And, you know, they stopped pushing it when they were full, I should say that. Once they've eaten, they stopped pushing it. But the ones that had the dopamine, they kept pushing the lever even if they didn't want the food. And what they found out was that dopamine is involved not just in learning, but specifically in forming a habit. And so when we learn something, it goes from a kind of a conscious performance of the activity to an unconscious performance of the activity, to that place of the habit forming where we don't have to think about it so much and we just kind of do it. And what they're realizing is that dopamine is very important for that. So that's why with people with Parkinson's, not only do they lose, you know, control of their movement, but they lose a lot of their habits, as it were, the things that they've performed all their lives. And so they can rescue that to some extent by giving the dopamine type drugs. You know, they can give those precursors to dopamine and try to kind of recover some of that. But what they're also realizing is that when you give these drugs like that, the administration of the drug does not control where the dopamine goes and how it's used, because they're realizing that's also important. Because the dopamine is used in so many different areas of the brain, where it's used, the amount, and the time, you know, involved are all very important. But that can be controlled, and this is where, you know, LOA and biohacking comes in, because you can then use your prefrontal cortex and your executive ability to determine what areas of the brain dopamine is being released and being used.
Now I have to ask you a question. This is this is an off the wall question, I admit. Okay, but I'm good at those.
Yes.
This particular question is, since these mice were particularly the ones who had these high levels of dopamine in them, since they were so heavily motivated, have we been able to rule out the possibility that they were doing tests of their own to try to find out how many different ways they could get the researchers to test them by pressing the levers over and over and over again?
You know what? That's a great question. Here's why, Walt. Because the same researcher, now this is Dr. Shien, his name is T-S-I-E-N, at the Georgia Institute of Health University. And this is one of the premier universities for neuroscience. And he has created, he's published other research on these, I forget the term they call, but these are super smart mice.
Really?
Yes. In fact, he has a name for them. There's one that's called Boogie, and the other, he has another name. But these are specific names. What he's done is he has upregulated the dopamine neurons and the dopamine receptors in these mice. And so what he's found is that these mice can learn at almost 10 times the faster rate than regular mice.
So are they going to run for office?
Well, yes, I was going to make a comment about Donald Trump, but I'll...
Isn't that great? You don't even have to make the comment, and it's still funny.
I know! It's so ripe for all kinds of... But anyways, yeah, so dopamine, yeah, so who knows, these mice, they're really super smart when you increase their dopamine levels. And you know, of course, that's what the biohackers are all interested in. But it's not just that they become smart; they become they've done some research with humans. They've also done some research with Parkinson's patients, where they have supplemented their diet with dopamine type drugs or dopamine type precursors, and they found very interesting things in terms of how they behave, how they make decisions, how they learn, how they perform certain tasks, how they their level of self-confidence and motivation changes when they're on the drugs versus when they're not on the drugs. And it's all very, very fascinating. But we're learning that there are things that we can do that can actually enhance our the effectiveness of, increase the amount of dopamine we produce, one, and increase the effectiveness of how it the effect on our brains.
So we don't have to mainline the stuff.
No, we don't.
Okay, well, that's probably a good thing, actually. You know, yes. You could see dopamine addicts in the street. You know, it'd be really a tragic situation. But
yeah, well, it's because what we know is that cocaine increases dopamine levels in the brain, mm-hmm. but it increases the levels in, like I said, in the areas involved with pleasure and risk taking. So you know, you become addicted, but you don't accomplish anything. So they've learned that that's not going to work.
Mm, okay. So you say we can do it naturally, I guess would be the word I would use for. What are the natural methods we can use?
Well, so here's what they found is that dopamine is the reward neurotransmitter.
Okay.
So in a primitive setting, the dopamine is released whenever we accomplish a task associated with our survival. So when we sleep, when we eat, you know, whatever we do to kind of ensure that we go on to live.
Well, we run away from Donald Trump.
Right. Yes. We do get a dopamine rush. Yeah. So what we're finding is that we can also increase the level of dopamine in our brain when we set goals and we accomplish them. So when we accomplish a task, when we succeed at something, there is a dopamine rush that is released in the brain. And if you can establish a cycle of that, then you have what is known as a persistent level of dopamine in the brain. And that is what high achievers and self-confident people actually have.
Okay. Who knew that goal setting had such a tremendous positive emotional impact?
Yes, yeah, I know. It's actually very, very interesting. It's interesting.
It makes you feel like, geez, I really should be getting out that piece of paper and pencil and writing down my goals again.
Yeah, because, you know, the thing is that when you what happens is that you know, it's not just the accomplishment of the goal, but it's like we've talked about in previous shows, an acknowledgement of that accomplishment. So you get a dopamine rush when you finish the goal. But if you really celebrate the accomplishment of that goal, you can heighten the amount of dopamine that is associated, that, you know, that gets released in the brain. You can heighten the intensity and the duration of that dopamine just by the way, by your attitude towards the accomplishment of that goal. So that, in other words, that's the way you're kind of biohacking your system.
Now, it does strike me that there's sort of a downside to this, the dark side, if you will. Yeah. The dark side would be where you have a goal, but you don't achieve the goal, and so you're running into frustration all the time.
Yes, and that, you know, you're asking all the right questions here today.
That's my job.
Yeah, because that's the other side of the research that they've done, where they've shown that people who tend to be, for want of a better word, lazy or the procrastinators, let's just say that, they have lower levels of dopamine. But here's the thing that makes it worse. The more the less goals they accomplish, the less dopamine they have.
So they feel worse and worse.
Exactly. So when there's something you know that you have to do or you want to do and you don't do it, what happens is, one, it increases the levels of adrenaline and cortisol, the stress hormones, so that then kind of shuts off the other areas of your brain, like your prefrontal cortex and the other areas that could have been associated with reward. But then with that increase in those neurotransmitters, they downregulate the production of dopamine. So the less you accomplish, the less dopamine you have. And it becomes like this negative spiral, as it were.
This suggests to me that there's actually a very strong benefit then in setting small short-term goals that are easily achievable.
Absolutely. And that's what all the, you know, the scientists are realizing. Yes. Setting small short-term goals and celebrating and acknowledging each of them. And then that, you know, brings me to one of the things that was mentioned by one of the articles about the Japanese philosophy of Kaizen. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have not. No. Tell us about that.
So Kaizen is the idea of breaking up tasks into small pieces and then celebrating each micro achievement, as it were. So
okay.
Their whole system of life and productivity, and, you know, it's even used in their car production industry, where you set small goals, and every time you achieve something, you acknowledge it, you celebrate it. So it's all about every day making progress, making some small progress towards a larger goal.
And now we understand that that process of celebrating these little goals, celebrating these little victories, if you will, they're what actually enable us to get to the point where we can achieve the bigger victories.
Right, because what that does is then it establishes an environment where dopamine is becomes the norm, as it were, because you not only are you producing dopamine regularly, but it's hanging around, and then that's what then gives you the drive, the motivation to keep going, to persevere, to continue doing what you're doing, so that you can keep this level of dopamine persistent in your brain. And that is what helps you then to become the high achiever, the people that accomplish these tasks. You know, because when I read these things, I thought about people like Steve Jobs, and I thought, man, he must have been a dopamine fanatic.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting because it suggests that even if you're in a really bad place,
yes,
even if you're everything seems to be against you and so forth, this shows that physiologically you really can turn it around. How long does it take? Is it quick? Is it slow?
It's instantaneous. They talk about you can whatever it is, like, you know, you wake up in the morning and you say, I'm going to brush my teeth, and you brush your teeth and you said, oh, I accomplished that. I did it. You know, and immediately you get a burst of dopamine.
Isn't that weird? I mean, you can actually be celebrating stuff that's absolutely silly and making yourself better at the same time.
Exactly. Yes, you can. And that's, you know, that's what we're realizing, that that's how the people who are intrinsically motivated, that's how they operate.
And so all you people out there who have told your students or your kids or whatever, don't be silly. Wrong message.
Yes.
Be silly.
Be silly. Yes. Even if you have to do it privately.
Yeah, right. Being silly is good for your health. It's good for your life. It's good for your happiness.
Yes, it is. And that's the other thing that we're learning about dopamine too. It's like, which is in line with what we believe in LOA, is that the visualization of a task, accomplished also can release dopamine.
Just the visualization.
Yes. So it releases, a lesser quantity, basically, but okay, it does release some. And so you can actually then, you know, kind of on a regular basis do this and kind of keep that dopamine going. And then, you know, one of the things that dopamine does is dopamine motivates you to want to release more dopamine. You know, that's how the drug addicts become addicted.
In this case, I'm with drug addicts. I don't really want to be addicted to dopamine, but I certainly want to have the increased quantities of
dopamine. Exactly.
Yeah.
That
actually aligns very nicely with my goal. As you know, one of my major goals is to try to find a way to be happy all the time, to feel joyful and all that all the time. Mm-hmm. And now what you're telling me is dopamine's the way.
Dopamine's the way.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, because what happens is when you start making dopamine release a regular part of your life, you know, there's a number of things that happen that kind of enhances that. You have more neurons. You get more neurons to produce dopamine, but you also get more an increase in the productivity of those neurons. So those neurons themselves start producing more dopamine, and then you get more receptors on your cells for dopamine. You know, there's an upregulation in dopamine in every sense of the word. And so, you know, you definitely want that. When you think about the fact that Parkinson's is a death in the neurons that produce dopamine, you want as many dopamine producing neurons as you possibly can to kind of stay
there. And it suggests something that hitherto would have seemed impossible. It suggests that it's possible for somebody who suffers from Parkinson's to get over Parkinson's by increasing the number of neurons that produce dopamine.
Yes, exactly.
Which you know, even 3 years, when my father passed in 2008, that would have been considered heretical.
Yes, that was just the crazy talk.
Yes. And it was just a good kind of crazy talk.
Right. Yeah, because now they're actually doing that type, those research in the labs. You know, they're creating Parkinson's mice and then designing experiments to have them regenerate those neurons that that produce the dopamine and thereby reduce and almost cure the incidence of the disease.
So if you're, I'm focusing on Parkinson's right now, but if mm-hmm. you're suffering from Parkinson's or you know someone who's suffering from Parkinson's, probably the best thing you can do for yourself or for that person is to help them find joy in life.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's where they're feeling the lack right now.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Which is always a wonderful thing to do anyway, but now you have a specific motivation for doing so.
Yes, and now you know what's happening on the inside as you do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really something. Now, are there other factors involved too? I mean, usually with these kinds of things, it's like diet and exercise and all this other stuff. Do those play a role, or is it just having fun?
No, those play a role because you have to provide the body with the raw material, as it were, to those neurons. And so,
do we know anything about what formulates those raw materials? Where they come from?
Yes, absolutely. Dopamine, it gets its name, from the fact that it's an amino acid, and most people think that it has something to do with dope, but actually it's just a coincidence that it's called dopamine.
Well, it's not completely a coincidence. It's because the people who named it dope, who named drugs dope, felt that dopamine high, and so they assumed they had to do with the stuff they were taking rather than what would naturally happen in their brains anyway if they just got themselves into a happy place.
Exactly. So, yeah, because dopamine is a contraction of the dihydroxyamine, which it is, and amine means amino acid and dihydroxy meaning two hydrogens. So, the name was right for dopa, as it were, or dope. Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's an amino acid, so that means it's built from proteins, from the building block of proteins, specific proteins, tyrosine. So you have to have a diet that is rich in protein, and it has to be protein that the body can break down into amino acids. And
woohoo! I've been claiming for years we should be eating high-protein diets. All these gurus out there saying, no, we're having too much protein. To you guys.
Yes, protein is essential. You need proteins. Your neurotransmitters are made up of proteins.
Up with proteins, down with carbs.
Oh, yes, definitely down with carbs. Because carbs cause, the use of carbs, the breakdown of carbs in the body produces free radicals that actually destroy your neurons. So, yeah, you definitely want to go easy on the carbs and
up. We got to imprison those radicals. I tell you, they're terrible.
Yeah, so you want to have the dopamine in there. I mean, the amino acids, the protein, and you want to exercise. Our good friend exercise always is a helpful thing.
Okay, so now we always have the big issue with exercise because there are a lot of people who don't exercise because they think it's, I can't handle this too much. Oh, God, I don't have to do that every single day, do I? All that kind of thing. So what levels of exercise do people have in order to get the dopamine increasing?
So you have to be active. You have to be active. You have to, get out and walk. You have to have deep breathing. You have to do something that increases the circulation of your blood, because that's very vital to the life of your brain and your neurons,
So you don't have to be an Ironman running the triathlon.
Not at all. No.
Okay. Well, that's good news. A lot more people are going to want to do it now that they realize they don't have to exhaust themselves in order to feel better.
Exactly. And that's interesting that you would mention exercise, because exercise, there's a lot of research about dopamine and exercise, right? Because they're trying to figure out, the people who exercise every day, how do they do it? How can we get the people who struggle with exercise to do it? And what we realize is that with people who exercise every day, for them, exercise is associated with a release of dopamine.
So there's not just an adrenaline high, there's a dopamine high.
There's a dopamine high.
And that's really a better high.
Yes, exactly.
It's a better quality high.
Right. So what they've done is they've realized that and then this is something we've learned about in LOA as well. If you can focus on the end result as opposed to the actual task itself, because the end result, the accomplishment of the goal, the reward, that's what releases the dopamine.
Well, I'm focused on the end result, but we have to take a break before we can even get to the end result.
Okay.
So let's take a break afterward. Let's talk about what it takes to focus on the end result, and more importantly, what that's going to do for us in the context of this discussion about dopamine.
Okay.
This is LOA Today here on PRN. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt and Yona on this Thursday, July the 9th, 2015. And for those of you who were paying attention, happy Independence Day a few days ago.
Yes.
I hope you had great weather. We had great weather here. And we're talking about other great stuff. We're talking about doping up with dopamine and how that actually enhances our ability to not only feel good, but to achieve more and to reach our goals in life. I mean, whoever thought that you could actually rely on internal chemicals to help you get where you want to go? But apparently, not only can we do. And those of us who reach the highest pinnacles of success do so the most. It's not because of how hard they work. It's because they got more dopamine.
They got more dopamine.
Donald, give us the dope. Come on.
That's right. Yes, and you can have more too. And that's the that's the amazing thing about all of this, because what we're finding out is getting external dopamine, as it were, is not the answer. You have to, do it from within, endogenously create the dopamine. That's the best way. So
endogenously. Now, there's a word for you. I like that one.
Yes.
I am within myself. I am endogenous.
Exactly. It's all with me. I'm my own source. I'm my own supply. I'm the one that's doing this. And that's what LOA is all about, taking charge of your life and your experiences. And here is one very concrete way, and the research is there to back it up.
This is the new me generation. This is the healthier me generation.
Yes.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Okay, we were talking about how to get this going into our lives. We kind of talked about exercise before the break and how it's a building process. But what more can we take from this in terms of, we all want to be more successful, happier, more joyful. We want to have fuller lives. So guide us. What can we do next? What's the next big thing we can do to increase our dopamine levels, which is going to actually help us get there?
Well, remember how we in LOA, we always talk about, focusing on the end goal, focusing on what makes you feel good, focusing.
Right, yeah. You mentioned that before the break, sure.
Yes, and that is, doing that is what gives you that dopamine rush, as it were.
Wait a minute. You're saying just focusing on the goal does it? You don't even have to write the goal down, just focusing on it?
Focusing on it, focusing on the goal and visualizing what's pleasurable about it gives you that dopamine rush. But remember, we want not just the dopamine rush. We want a sustained release of dopamine, right? Because that's where the confident high achievers are. But we can start with that dopamine rush by using the visualization, and that release of dopamine is what then motivates us to actually get up and go accomplish the goal.
Ah, so the whole point of the visualization is to kickstart us.
Yes.
Ah, now it starts to make sense. Before it was like, well, yeah, you just visualize it and boom, it shows up. That's the way a lot of the people seem to explain it. But no, that's not it at all.
Yes, it gives you the motivation, the drive, it gives you the clarity. It also gives you the inspiration of how to get there more quickly. It gets the whole brain just jazzed up and fired up and like, okay, we want to accomplish this goal because this thing feels good,
Yeah, well, we all know that feeling. When it feels good, it feels good.
Yes, exactly. And you can do the same thing with exercises, like, for people who don't, are not fond of exercise yet. And I stress the word yet, because we can all get there, is you start thinking about how you feel once you've exercised, once you've actually accomplished it. So you set a goal, whether it is to walk a mile or walk for 15, 20 minutes, you set that goal. And then you think about how you're going to feel. You're going to be feeling alive and vibrant, and you're going to congratulate yourself, and you're going to put your hands in the air and say, yes, I did it. And that's where that's the dopamine, the initial burst that comes with that. And that motivates you to then go do it. And once you've accomplished it, there's more dopamine that's released.
Before the break, when we were first talking about the role of exercise, you used a great word at that point. You used the word active. And it pointed something to me just now as you were describing what happens when you focus on the positive side of exercise. All we're really talking about here is doing more activity than you have been doing.
Yes.
And just turning that into a slowly evolving snowball effect.
Exactly. Yes. And dopamine helps to turn that into the snowball effect.
So if all you've been doing is sitting around and watching TV, at least get up and go to the refrigerator every 3 minutes. Because that activity alone is activity that you hadn't been doing.
Exactly.
And then once you've been going to the refrigerator every 3 minutes, try, you know, going out the door every 3 minutes.
Or walk around the house or
do something else, you know. Yes. But the point is, it's increasing our active behavior that's getting us there. You don't have to be running right away. You don't even have to do exercise, quote unquote.
Right.
You don't have to think about it as exercise. You can just think about it as being more active.
More active. Exactly. Just increasing the flow of blood through your system.
We're sounding like one of these commercials. Live a more active lifestyle.
Yes. Get more dopamine going.
It's dopamine, the new product from your body.
Right. Yeah, so if you can, you know, and all of these things help, you know, by setting these little goals, as the philosophy of Kaizen says, you know, so you may write down, okay, today I'm going to, you know, walk to the refrigerator or, you know, I'm going to do that 5 times. And every time you do it, you put a check mark off, you know, whether it's in your notebook, on your calendar, you can even do it on your phone, you know, and just kind of acknowledge the completion of that task, the successful completion of the task. That's what, you know, what gets the dopamine involved. And in, you know, dopamine, as we learned, is not just involved in completing tasks, but it helps to, it's kind of like the glue that makes a task into a habit, in that it becomes part of your subconscious. So there's less struggle involved in actually the initiation of the task, and it becomes easier, and that frees up mental and psychic energy to accomplish other tasks in your life, and so that you become more productive, and when you become more productive, then you start feeling good and you produce more dopamine, and you start feeling self-confident and you produce more dopamine, and, you know, and then eventually you become a Steve Jobs.
Well, I'm not sure I want to become Steve Jobs, but certainly I admire how much dopamine he had going on. That was a good thing.
Yes, he took it to the extreme, I think, to the point where it became almost detrimental.
Well, he had like a total cocktail going on, because he had both the stress hormones and the dopamine all kind of mixing together, and they were like flowing like crazy, and I'm not sure that's such the best way to do things.
Yeah, and then he didn't eat. Yeah. This guy did not eat. You would not believe the level of starvation that he existed on.
Yeah, well, actually I would, because, well, anyway, we won't go there. The other point that occurs to me is, if you are overweight, you probably shouldn't just stop at getting up and going to the refrigerator every 3 minutes. You need to advance to the next level of activity fairly, fairly soon.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just going to feed that food addiction you've gotten. That's
right. It's true. Yes. Yeah. Going to the refrigerator.
So you know, go to the living room, go to the bedroom, go someplace, any place else. Just, you know, increase the activity, but let's not make it all about the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know, like, one thing I used to do, what I used to kind of hack myself, you know, one thing I didn't like was cleaning up, but I used to have this game where I played with myself called pick up 25 things or 100 things or put 25 things away. And I would literally go around the room and count how many things I put away and actually celebrate putting those things away. It made cleaning up fun for me.
So you were like the seven dwarfs. You whistled while you worked.
Yes. And I didn't realize at that time I was actually giving myself these dopamine, you know, bursts of dopamine every time I did that.
Isn't that an interesting thing? Yeah. Because once again, we're touching on an LOA concept. The Law of Attraction teachers teach us that you want to take negatives going on in your life and find ways to look at the silver lining, to look at the positive side.
Exactly.
Well, here's evidence that when you do that, you are actually fueling your dopamine supply.
Yes, you are. You are, definitely.
Wow. Talk about incentive.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, one of the other interesting side was what I was learning about dopamine was that, you know, procrastination, and we talked about briefly, what that happens is you procrastinate because you're looking at the the negative side of the task. You're looking at the stuff that you feel badly about, and that you feel overwhelmed, or you feel some kind of despair, and you know, and what you do is then you start producing negative chemicals. You produce, like I said, the adrenaline and the cortisol, which shuts your brain down, and you can't even, you know, see any other side of it. And then what that does, then that then increases the negative chemicals, decreases the dopamine, and you have this cycle. And what people tend to do, and I, you know, I'm guilty of that too, is we tend to look for other tasks that might give us that very minute dopamine spike, but it's very temporary, and it's almost it just basically depletes your dopamine level. So you might go surf the net or get on Facebook or, you know, do anything else to not feel the discomfort that you feel by focusing on the negative aspects.
Yeah, you can't even call that a spike. It's more like a little tiny zip.
Exactly. And then it leaves you feeling worse afterwards.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Which is true. I'm very guilty of that. I do that myself a lot. And now you're giving me a reason to understand that that is actually very counterproductive.
Yes. And now you know why, because you're really kind of just depleting your dopamine levels. Because if you do that, you know, for a persistent level of time, you can get into the state where you actually kind of running on empty as far as dopamine is concerned, and what you have is depression and lethargy and apathy. You're just like, oh, I don't want to do anything.
And I know all about that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm an expert at it, and I don't want to be.
Right. And so now you know what's happening, and you can, you know, you have the opportunity to take control of that. So it's pretty cool.
Let's go back again to what the requirements are for successfully increasing dopamine, because now all of a sudden, just by talking about that, my dopamine levels are falling. So I got to get them back up again.
Okay. All right. So you kind of, you set yourself these little, you break your tasks up into smaller pieces, as it were.
Right. Okay.
Every time you accomplish one, you complete something, you successfully get something done, you acknowledge it, you celebrate it. You know, you can even, you know, imagine there's a little lever or something. Those actually help, believe it or not. Research has shown that when people do that, it does cause an increased release of dopamine. It's amazing how the mind works. But you imagine the level and you press it down and it's like, oh yeah, dopamine. And so you keep, you know, doing that until you increase the release of dopamine, you increase the amount of neurons that produce dopamine, you increase the sustained effect of dopamine, and you do that for small tasks, and eventually you do that for big tasks. And especially with the tasks that you are having trouble with, that you're procrastinating with, try to focus on the end point, the feel-good part of that goal. Focus on celebrating the accomplishment of that goal. And you know, when you tend to want to procrastinate, you know, it helps to get a clear picture of why you want to do this. What's good? What are the benefits of accomplishing this goal? And keep that foremost in your mind and let that, you know, help you release the dopamine and motivate yourself to going forward and persevering.
There's an old Far Side cartoon that I've referred to it a number of times during these shows, during these broadcasts, and I often think about it. Right now, as we're talking about this, I empathize with the main protagonist in this cartoon frame even more. Mm-hmm. It's a shot of hell, and mm-hmm. there's two devils who are supervising the residents of hell.
Yeah.
One guy who's in the middle of all the fire and brimstone, he's sweeping away and he's whistling, having a happy day and so forth. And mm-hmm. the two devils say to each other, we're just not getting through to this guy. Right now, as you're talking about all this, about, you know, celebrating the little things, celebrating the little tiny accomplishments and so forth and feeling good about them, I'm realizing just how smart that guy is.
Yes,
the guy
exactly.
with the broom is absolutely brilliant. He's basically
brilliant.
Working his way out of hell.
Yes. Yes, he is. And, you know, we've you know, every one of us have had that time when we feel like we're, you know, why is it someone else is able to accomplish all this and do all this stuff and get all this done? And you know that you can too. You have the ability. You're smart enough. But there's just something holding you back. And now you know what this other guy, what's going on in his mind, whether it's consciously or not, whether it's deliberately or not. That's exactly what he's doing. he's celebrating his accomplishment and giving himself more dopamine, and there's more dopamine in his brain, and it's motivating him to keep going and keep going and keep going. And my procrastination is actually depleting my dopamine. So I have to find ways to then, you know, small ways. That's why I heard a speech by a military officer for graduation. And he was talking about, you know, giving the students secrets to success in life. And one of his first secret was make your bed every morning. And what he said was there's nothing, you know, magical about making your bed. But what he says is the act of completing that task sets you up for success for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those little tiny successes to celebrate. It isn't just making. He would actually have been better off if he had said, don't just make your bed, but celebrate the fact that you made it.
Celebrate the fact that you made your bed, yes, he said. And he was funny. He said, if you had a crummy day and then things just didn't work out and you get back to your room, it's like, oh, my bed, it's made.
And if you had a crummy day, you could always brush the crumbs out of the bed. I mean.
Yeah, so you know that now it's helping me to understand a little bit about what makes successful people so successful.
Yeah. Because what it really means is that regardless of what's going on around them, I keep thinking about the guy in hell, the guy who's whistling as he's in hell. That's quite a level of achievement to be whistling when you're in hell, because exactly. What it basically means is he has successfully blotted out all the horror going on around him, and mm-hmm. he's just taking little bits of pleasure in the little things that he can control, like sweeping the floor.
Yes, absolutely.
And in doing so, he ends up climbing out of hell.
Yes, he gets better and better, and things get better and better, and life gets better and better. And
the way we experience that, of course, it isn't that we climb out of hell. It's like, wait a minute, where did hell go?
Yes, exactly.
It was here a minute ago. I know it was.
Right, yeah. And yeah, like you said, this has been really, for me, very eye-opening, because I'm learning more and more about the ways in which I sabotage myself, but also more and more about the ways that I can and help myself and get better, because I realize that the people who are succeeding, the successful people, they don't see the hell around them. They don't see the mundane or the depressing or, you know, the tasks that they have to do. They see pictures of success and completion and you know, one achievement to another, and that's, it's almost as if they have tunnel vision, and that's all they see when they, you know, get up and start getting on with their day.
Their reticular activating systems are filtering the right way.
Absolutely, yes.
Which is what we all need to aspire to.
Exactly. And we can.
We get there. It's not like it's out of reach. It's within every single human being's reach.
Yeah, because now we know the brain is plastic or malleable. We can change it. So we can actually change our brain to that of the high-achieving, successful, self-confident people.
And it doesn't matter how much money you have. Nope. Or don't have. It doesn't matter whether you have a job. Doesn't matter whether you're healthy. Doesn't matter what your circumstances in life is in any way. No matter where you are right now, if you're breathing, if you're still alive, if you're still conscious, you can climb out of it.
You can, because, you know, the dopamine is endogenous.
And I wouldn't be surprised if you can climb out even if you're unconscious.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, I wouldn't be either.
It's all really starting to come together, because I've already mentioned in this show and other shows that one of my goals is to be happy and joyful all the time. Another one is to basically physiologically make myself younger, to youngify myself.
Yeah.
And this is reinforcing once again, not only is that possible, that's within reach.
It is in reach, yes.
And the secret is finding the little things to always be celebrating no matter what's going on in my life.
Yes, it all comes back to that, finding the ways to...
And it makes sense, too, because since we know that the reticular activating system, which we've talked about numerous times, mm-hmm. has a filtering effect, mm-hmm. what we want to do is we want to filter out the stuff that annoys us and just keep our attention focused on the good stuff. That actually is a way of making the RAS help us rather than hinder us.
Right, yes. And then life becomes all about those things that help us.
So all this physiology actually is coming together. It's coming together into this one great big LOA soup.
Yes, it's reinforcing what we know and teaching us new ways of understanding it and applying it, and it's really awesome.
And drink the soup, it's good for you.
It's good for you. You know, speaking of soup, you know, there was some that when there was a practiced in Europe and even back in the Caribbean and parts of Africa, when people would be sick, they would always give them broth, bone broth, because they didn't know why. They just knew that when they did, it was healthy.
Well, the witch doctor said it was good.
Pardon me?
The witch doctor said it was good, so it had to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it turns out bone broth, besides being rich in amino acid and in the precursors to the blood cells, it helps strengthen your immune system and helps you produce more protein. And now we know protein is essential to the neurotransmitters, and it's all just kind of work together to help make you better. So
there's actually a physiological benefit to feeling joyful from chicken soup.
Yes, there is.
I'm sure moms all over the world are going to love that fact.
Yay.
Drink your soup. It's good for you.
Yes, yep. You know, there's wisdom in so many of these practices that we take for granted.
Oh, yeah. The folk wisdom is actually a lot smarter than science previously gave it credit for.
Right. Yes. And now they're learning that, yeah.
They should have been listening to their moms all along.
Along.
All right. Well, let's see. We've only got about 2 or 3 minutes left. How can we summarize all this beyond the fact that this is really cool, that this is actually pulling together all of our concepts of LOA the way we thought that they would? But how about another takeaway in terms of how we can get this going on a daily basis in the little ways? I mean, what are some of the other tricks we can use to make sure we're always focusing on little victories?
Yeah. So, I mentioned before that it's important to do the visualization of your goals, because that helps, to produce some dopamine even before you've actually accomplished it. Mm-hmm. But what it does too, it increases the pleasure aspect that is associated with those goals. And what we're learning is that pleasure I shouldn't say learning, we probably knew all along, pleasure is a much stronger motivator than willpower.
Not a surprise.
Yes.
A surprise.
Right, because what you're doing is you are establishing an environment in your body and in your brain that then drives the entire system to the maintaining of that environment. So instead of trying to just use your willpower, now you got every aspect of your body and your psyche and your brain working with you towards the accomplishment of that goal.
Essentially, what we're trying to do, in broad terms, is to establish a positive habit.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And we're doing it through internally produced drugs.
Right. Because dopamine is all about the habit. It's all about producing habits. That's why Parkinson's people lose their habits, because they lose their dopamine. So we want to use dopamine to build and establish good habits such that success then becomes a default for us. We just, we don't even think about it. We just do it.
Now, we only have about a minute and a half left, so I want to touch on one last point along this line.
Okay.
And that is, we have talked previously about the ability of the body to produce new neurons. And when you introduced the concept of plasticity to us, that was one of the focuses, that we can actually grow neurons. And that was new to the scientific community. We didn't know that that was possible. And now we know that it is possible.
Right.
So I have to ask, is it possible to build neurons for the purpose of flooding ourselves with more dopamine?
Yes. Yes, actually, it is. It is. And that's what the goal setting does. The goal setting and accomplishing the goal setting, celebrating the goals that they've learned actually increases neurons. It starts off, first producing more neurons, but then when the body says, oh, okay, so they're really serious about this dopamine thing, I guess we got to kind of recruit more, resources to do that. And that's how the body works. So then it goes into producing more neurons, and then those neurons become more efficient. And then we upregulate the gene for the production of dopamine. So the whole system gets involved, but certainly increasing the number of neurons associated with that is one of the things that happens.
Well, that's cool, because that means that the goal is within reach. The goal of being able to turn around when everything is bleakest is within reach because we can actually grow new pathways that feel better, that fuel us with more feel-good stuff, that build new pathways that feel better, that fuel us, and so on and so forth.
That's right. You got it.
Cool. Hey, this has been great, Ioana. Thank you so much for doing this research. As usual, your research is very enlightening and very positive and feels good.
Yeah, it feels good for me, too. That's why I enjoy doing it.
So pat yourself on the back. You've done good again.
I did.
And thank you for doing it. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Friends to you.